the Pattern Podcast. Make left traffic, clear for the option.
All right, welcome to VFR. Exchange approved, 4x Gum. Line up and wait, 7 range, 4x Gum.
Mark Tower, 172, Romeo Hotel, hold the shuttle on the 133, ready to take off.
I'll be done about 3-2-1 Mike, and I'm downwind for runway 25.
I'm John.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Mark.
And we are the In the Pattern Podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 5 of the In the Pattern Podcast. I'm Chris, here in sunny Phoenix, Arizona. Along with me, I've got John in the Baltimore area and Mark in the Sacramento, California area. We've got East Coast to West Coast covered. So we're going to go ahead and get into this episode, tell you a little bit about what's been going on, or actually more or less probably what's not been going on, as none of us have really flown all that much in the last month or so. But anyways, how about you, John? What have you been up to?
Well, not too much here in icy cold Baltimore, Maryland. I've been kind of laying low for the past couple of weeks, you know, Thanksgiving, all the family stuff, that, and had a couple family things a couple weeks before that, so haven't really flown since the last time we podcasted. Yeah, not too much, trying to figure out how to continue flying. See if we've gotten that worked out. So yeah.
Sounds like you got that finally handled, and it's going to be back on track.
I do. Thanks to the help of Pilot Finance, lies in private instrument ratings. And I have enough hours left that I'm able to do that. And I did a program through them, and I'm able to fly 3 days a week now with the flight school. They pay a flight school, and then I just pay them monthly from now for a while, which lets me finish up quicker. And then by the time you calculate all the interest and everything, it's cheaper than all of the extra flights you'd have to do if you kept stopping and restarting and all that stuff. So it just makes sense.
Yeah, that's a ton. 3 times a week. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, so I'm hoping to be done fairly quickly.
You'll probably get this whole thing knocked out by March.
That's my goal. I'd like to be done by March. I've got 9 or 10 lessons set up through January right now. I may be adding another 1 or 2, depending on if you can fit me in or not. I got 2 this weekend coming up, and I'm going to have one. He wants me to do one lesson, the first lesson, kind of getting back into it, seeing how I am after being off for a month, doing some ground on cross countries and planning cross countries, and then it looks like Sunday we're going to start going places. So yeah, it's going to be nice. I'm excited.
And how about the weather for this time of year and flight training out there?
It's cold, but I started in January, so I'm, you know, perfectly comfortable with the cold weather. It's a lot. It's nice because it's very calm.
Okay.
Because you don't have that convection going on that you have during the summer, so it's usually pretty stable and smooth. The only thing you have to watch for is the icing, which generally when I flew earlier this year, I didn't hit too much of that, except for, you know, when we got dumped with like 8 feet of snow here on the East Coast. But
so do you run with carb heat on all the time then, or only still when you're descending?
No, I'm actually in fuel injected now, but I was with a carburetor before, and no, you still carb heat's just the same. You run it when you're going, you know, low power, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And I think the range for that's usually between like what, 30 and 40 degrees to 70 degrees outside,
mm-hmm.
is the carb heat range. So, I mean, when you're running at 32, you know, outside, it's not really in that range anyway, but,
depending on the moisture and temperatures under 70 degrees Fahrenheit, they say.
Yeah. And usually there's not a lot of moisture in the winter. I mean, it's pretty dry out here. Just cold air just does not hold moisture like warm air does. So yeah, I mean, that's still normal, but now I'll be running the fuel injected. And I mean, the biggest thing is just making sure the engine's warm before you start it. And I'm interested to see how my flight school now does it, because they're all in hangars and I don't usually see outlets.
They have preheater blankets or something, or what?
They may. I'm not sure. I haven't seen how they do it. Now, the school I was at before had just extension cords to each plane, and they plugged them in.
Okay.
I'm intrigued to see how this school does it, but that's the biggest thing. And just making sure that you're warm during the pre-flight, which would be a little easier being in a hangar now because I won't have the wind as much if there's a little breeze or something. Because that was the biggest thing before is you'd have all of the frost. Like if I was going early in the morning, the planes would be covered in frost. You'd have to scrape that off. You can't have that kind of stuff on the wing. So I'd have to go through and wipe it all down on the leading edge. And I didn't have gloves at the time, so it was rough. But, yeah, that's the biggest thing. I mean, once you're up in the air, it's pretty warm. So, yeah, I'm just excited to get back.
Yeah, I would like to see the inside of the airplane again soon. I think I've been off for, 2 months now. Finally, she said that, they have to have 10 hours on the Archer before we can use it for touch and goes. They want 10 hours of solid flight time because it's still got the mineral oil in it after they, put the engine back together. That was the reason for the 10 hours. So that it's got the mineral oil in it and they got to run it 10 hours. So they want cross country flights to be ran. So I talked to her, last week sometime and I just texted her the other day. I said, if there isn't 10 hours on it yet, let's just start doing cross country because I don't want to be out of the plane any longer at this point, So that's what I want to get done.
Worst case scenario, just make her go on a cross country herself just to get the time up to 10 hours.
Yeah, she was working on that, and she had some other flight instructors that was planning on renting the plane to get it up there. And if I read this text correctly, the last one that she sent me, she said that it was only a half an hour away from being done. So I think I'm good to go for this weekend too, finally.
Cool, because I'd imagine, she's losing money off that, so
Yeah.
I'd imagine she'd be pretty eager to just go fly it for 3 hours here, every weekend and then get it up to the 10 hours it needs.
Yeah, big time. And other than waiting around for that to happen, I went over to Deer Valley. It was November 14th. I went over to the airport because some bombers were coming in and they're having kind of a big thing coming on. What it was is that the B-29 Fifi was flying in from Long Beach, where it was sitting over there at the AOPA conference?
Yeah, the one down in San Diego.
Yeah.
Yeah.
San Diego, yeah. So Fifi was flying in from there and stopping over at Deer Valley Airport, where I fly out of. So I went over there early in the morning, got a good spot with my camera and everything, and watched for it to come in. And while we were waiting for it, one of the B-25s that sits over, and it's called Made in the Shade. It's one of the B-25 Mitchells that's over at Chandler Airport. And along with it was B-17 Sentimental Journey. It also came over from Chandler. And then a little later on, the B-29 Fifi showed up. And they were going to hang out and keep those planes there for the next 3 or 4 days or so and give rides. Take a wild guess of what it costs to ride in the nose of Fifi is.
$400 for a half-hour flight.
900 and some odd bucks. I forget what the...
Wow.
It's basically $1,000 for a ride in that thing.
So three times what it would be in a B-17.
Dude, it's just crazy. I don't know how many flights they ended up taking. I just got... I've got a little video and some pictures and stuff, and I put the pictures up on my Picasa. You guys probably saw them. I put the pictures up there of them flying in and landing and stuff like that. But I don't know how many actual people paid for rides, but I've got a lot of things I can do with $1,000 other than a 30-minute ride in the aircraft.
If I wasn't flight training right now and worried about money with flight training, I would totally do that.
Yeah. Would be a chance in a lifetime to be in something that historic. It's the only, flying B-29 in the world right now.
Yeah, I will say this. My goal with going to Oshkosh next year is to get in the B-17 because I really want to do that. That's a little more affordable at $350, $360, whatever it is for EAA members. Mm-hmm. But I really want to do that. I wanted to do it this year, but it was way out of my price range this year, so I just ended up doing the Ford Tri-Motor.
Oh, that's cool.
Which was a lot of fun. I got pictures of that on Picasa too. But And a couple of videos. It was a little bit of a hard landing when he came down, but I mean, it's basically a giant aluminum tin can, so.
Yeah, corrugated.
Yeah. So it's, they had to have 9 people on that thing, they said, because otherwise we're just get blown around just too much.
Huh. Pretty good size aircraft.
Yeah, but it's just, it's so light that it's, and it's such, it's so big that I think just the wind would just blow it away.
Yeah, well, it's square. There's not much in the way of aerodynamics on that thing.
Yeah.
So. And some other cool things flew in. A couple of cool P-51 Mustangs, and then a replica, Supermarine. That was really it for, like, nostalgic-type aircraft. It was a good day. Tons and tons and tons of people showed up for something that wasn't supposed to be an air show per se, but there was tons of people there waiting for it to come in, and we were tracking the flight on FlightAware after it left California and waiting for it to show up, and then we spotted it way out there, and then we heard it because they, up on the deck where the observation deck where you can sit, it's above the restaurant, they have the air traffic control going on. So you can hear what's going on from ground to air.
Cool.
That's a cool place to sit there and spot for aircraft and listen to the guys talk and stuff like that.
Yeah. Awesome.
What up with you, Big Mark?
Well, Well, the last time I actually flew was November 12th. Just did a local training thing. Did some ground school on the 19th just because the weather was not that great. Went up there thinking that I pretty much knew everything I needed to know up to that point. And then as my instructor started peeling the onion back, he let me know how much I really didn't know. And then the chief instructor, he popped into the office too, and he started asking me questions. And I was like, the past 2 weeks, that's pretty much all I've done is a lot of reading, a lot of studying. And then he sent me a text going, are we going to be able to fly this Friday? And I said, I can't right now just because of some personal reasons. And he goes, okay, then you need to study your bleep off because, you have to take the written test before we can do cross country. And I was like, oh God. So I've been studying for the written now for the past, 3 days, and I've got some software on my iPhone that I pop up, and when I can, I'm going through it. And I think I'm averaging probably 80% every time I take this, but I really want to do better sit down.
So what are you using?
I have the ASA. Actually, I have Pilot Prep, which was like $9.99 or something like that. And I've had it for 6-8 months. Like I actually bought it when I first started flight training. And it's actually pretty good. They've updated it a couple of times since I've had it. And they have it for the private, for the sport, for instrument, commercial. And I think it's all included in the same $10.
I guess that's a little better than the one I'm using, the ASA Prepware. And that one, it's the private, instrument, commercial, and something else, I think. Maybe multi-engine or CFI or something like that. I don't know. But I think each of those are $10, so I paid $10 for the private, which is totally worth it, though, because I'm using it on the iPad. I don't know about you, but having it with you kind of on the go,
yeah.
I don't know if that makes you study more because you can do a couple questions at a time.
That's exactly what I do. It's funny. I was trying to study today at work while my computer was doing some processing, and I was thinking about you having the iPad. I was like, man, I sure wish I had one because it'd be so much easier to see, especially when you got to pull up one of the charts or a PyRep or something to read it. And it's read on the iPhone, but you what you got to do.
That was kind of one of my things when I was doing it, as I was looking at it, and I'm like, it's great because you get the full chart on there, like it's like, all right, refer to this chart, this quadrant, and I have it right there. But I was kind of thinking about it. I was like, well, number one, when I haven't done any of the cross country questions, we have to measure things.
Right.
I'm intrigued to see how that works. And number two, I was thinking people on iPhones, I know Droid has a couple of them. I don't know if they're any good or not, but, I'm like on the small screen, how this has got to be difficult. I'm like, but having it on the iPad on this giant, like 9-inch screen is awesome.
It's tough because I have to do a lot of the pinch zoom and then pan across. And I mean, one of the questions that I got today was a blimp passes over a VOR at this time, and you know, 12 minutes later, it's at this point. Where's it at in 63 minutes if it keeps following this Victor Airway? And I'm sitting there going, it's like a fingertip width. And I'm like, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Fingertip.
I mean, it was horrible. You know, I'm trying to figure it out. And I'm like, and I got the question right. But I mean, it was just like only, it just wasn't as easy as if I had an iPad where I could really see, you know, what I was looking at.
Yeah. And I just looked it up too. I have the Private Pilot Prepware, and it has Private Pilot Airplane, Glider, Lighter Than Air, Powered Parachute, Rotorcraft, and Weight Shift Control.
Cool.
And I can do a study or a test. The study's nice because you just do the whole section. So you can do basic aerodynamics, aircraft systems, weather, procedures, and airport operations, all the different sections, and then you can just do all the questions, and it gives you an immediate, you got it right or not. And then it gives you a little explanation at the bottom of here is why the correct answer is correct.
Yeah.
That sounds exactly how Sporties is.
It's exactly like Sporties, but what I like better about it, and the only thing I like better about it, is the fact that I can have it in my hands, and when I want to do it, I can just do a couple questions and go. Whereas Sporties, I need to sit down at the computer, load it up and do it, because I think I tried it once in the iPad and it just wasn't really working. So I like the ability to just kind of have it on the go. Mm-hmm. And I think it's helping me study more and actually think about the written more than I would have otherwise. Because before I was just kind of like, oh yeah, I got to do that at some point. But I wouldn't really sit down and do it. Whereas now I can just pull it up occasionally, answer a few questions and say, oh, you know what? I think I'm getting aerodynamics now as far as the test questions are concerned.
Mm-hmm. You know, it was funny, when I pulled it up today at work, I actually struggled with like the first three questions because I had to mentally shift into like test mode. and then when my brain kicked into gear, because, you know, I do engineering design, I had to shift into FAA, you know, prep. it's a different thought process. I started thinking about it, and then I started rolling through questions again. It took me a little bit of time to shift gears mentally. But like you say, having it right there, I can just pull my phone up and start from wherever I left off. And the nice one about the pilot prep is that you have different settings. You can either have it, treat it like it's the test and there's not an instant feedback, or you do instant feedback. You can also do like 10 questions, 20, 40, continuous. I did like the 60 questions.
Yeah.
I did like the 60 question one here this afternoon, and I got like 4 wrong. So I was pretty happy with that. But, you know, I think I'm a little bit uncomfortable in a couple of areas, especially when my instructor threw some stuff at me and I was like, I don't really know that, you know, so.
The nice thing is, though, I found is as you're going through the questions, you know, even the ones you don't know, you remember.
For next time.
Because you get it wrong and then you're like, oh. You see the correct answer, and you're like, that's what they're looking for. And then now you know that question. It's like, okay, when they ask that question, I'm ready for it now because I've seen it. So, like, every time I take it, you know, I do so much better because I've seen the questions now and what they're asking and how they're asking it, and I'm already refreshed in kind of what the answers are. So, I like going through even when I don't know what all the answers are. Like, if I get, like, I've been getting like 80s too, but like one of them I got like a 60% or something and I was doing really bad. But the next time I did it, you know, I got like a 90 because I'd seen the questions.
Yeah, I was doing the same thing, but there was this one set of questions and I can't remember right now what specifically it was about. I don't know if it was altimeter settings or what, but I would constantly get the question wrong because there was two questions that was, I don't know, almost identical, but worded in reverse type of thing. And so
they like to do that.
I was totally, you know, tricking myself each time into picking the wrong answer for whatever reason.
I had the same thing with one question today, and it was about the compass and it's the ands thing, the ands. And it says, if the plane's flying, you know, when's it going to show you a southerly turn? And I was going through it going, I'm thinking about it, and I had just read about this, and thinking, crap, what was it? And you know, I struggled with that one, and it's something so simple, you know, but I'm trying to get out of answering it wrong consistently. You know what I'm saying? Like you were just saying, Chris.
Yeah.
When you're in the Northern Hemisphere and you're on a whatever course and you turn right to head north, well, the compass varies from one direction to the other first, whatever. So confusing, man.
Oh, that's the exactly. One. And those who follow me on Twitter will see my tweets on this, where I get the Ian's one, you know, they accelerate north, decelerate south. But for the life of me, I can never remember the turn one.
Yeah.
Where you turn, you know, it slows or dips the other way for a second. I just, for the life of me, I can never remember that.
So, Mark, they want you to have your written completed before you start cross country?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's a school requirement.
And I think a lot of places do that, though. Mine doesn't require it, but I've heard that a lot.
I think for them it's a like a stage check, so that if you can pass the written, you understand a lot of the areas enough that okay, now you're ready to progress, and let's talk about pilotage and VOR and navigation. So
you're part 61, right?
Yeah.
I think we all are, right?
Well,
Chris, you're part 61 as well.
I think that's right. Even though I'm going through a private instructor, I think that's right.
I think you are, because you're doing the ground by your own, right? Yeah. Just want to clarify that. But
yeah, I believe that's right. Yeah, I definitely want to get mine done in the next couple of months, but it's not a requirement for me to have it done before we start.
I think they just treat it as for my school, they just treat it as the next major hurdle. You know, you go through your basic, then you solo. Huge hurdle. Greatest day of your life. Okay, now let's move on. Now let's take the written. Okay, now you pass the written with a, you know, whatever score or better. And okay, now that's your hurdle. Now let's go to the next thing. Let's do let's talk the solo cross country out of the way. That's your next big one, you know. So I think that's how they kind of have it set in stages. I'm not quite sure, but.
Yeah, my school treats it like that, but it's not like necessarily a requirement that I have the written, but it's like once you're done the solo, it's, you know, the instructor's like, okay, you got that written coming up now, you need to get that done, and then they start hammering me more on that, the written, get the written done, and, you know, we'll still continue on with the cross countries now. It's more of a focus now on you need to get it done now, so we're not worrying about it. When it comes time to take the check ride, oh wait, you haven't gotten the written, we need to wait now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I have my goal, and now that I'm getting back into flying too, this will help. This weekend, this will help. I want to get the written done by the end of the year. Especially because I'll have, not that I'll be close to being done, but I'll have close to 40 hours by the end of the year probably. So I'd like to, since I'm going to be doing so many cross countries coming up, I'd like to have that just done out of the way. So.
Good goal.
So we'll see if I can do it. I'll let you guys, Twitter and the listeners, hold me accountable to that. So
absolutely, that'd be a hell of a Christmas present to yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. So mandate for everyone listening: keep me focused on that, so I can get it done. But that's my goal. So I'm hoping in the next
everybody start randomly popping John for questions.
Yeah, I'm cool with that, man. Pop me some questions on Twitter. I'll see what I can come up with. I think I'm flying this weekend, and then I'm off for a week because I just couldn't fit on the schedule. So I think after that, I'm going to, when I get back in, which I believe is the 19th, not the 19th, it's like the 12th of December or something like that, flying Tuesday mornings now. So I think then I'm going to talk to my instructor about it and set up a time to meet with him to go over what I know for the test, because he has to sign me off for it. So I think at that, you know, in about a week and a half here now, I'm going to try to get most of my studying done so I can get signed off by him so I can go ahead and go drop the 150 and take it.
Nice.
That's what it runs, huh? 150.
It was 100, but they upped it to 150. I think it was April, because it was right when I stopped the first time that they upped it. and you can get $10 or 10% off through EAA, AOPA. They all offer discounts with the CATS testing.
Cool.
So that's my goal.
Good one. Hope you make it. It'd be awesome to hear.
Me too.
And you can slide us all the correct answers.
I'm sorry, the internet has them all.
Uh-huh. Well, that's the thing. The whole written thing comes down to how good are you at memorizing, you know, because it becomes a memorization task. I remember once I was studying for a Microsoft certification, and I practiced this exam so many times online that by the time I went and took the test, I was literally picking the answers before reading the question because I just saw the answers so many question and answer so many times. I wasn't even reading the questions. My eyes would just automatically divert to the bottom part of the answer, and I'd see it, and I'd just glance up like, yep, that's the one. And I took this Microsoft certification test. I think it was just for Windows XP back in the day. And I was done with the whole thing in like, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes, and I came out and go, I'm done. And the guy's like, what? You know, here's your certificate, you know, and it was all over. So this is kind of the same thing because it ain't like these questions will be similar to the test. They turn out to be the exact same questions.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the nice thing, though, is that studying for the written, though, sets you up for the oral exam really well.
Yeah.
And especially if you do, I was talking to a pilot friend of mine, and he was saying, he's like, look, you know, get above a 90, but don't quite get 100. He's like, because...
You know what? I was going to say, they were just talking about that. They said the same thing on the Pilot's Journey podcast. What the two stews on episode 25, I think is what it was. The one that just came out, which was a really good episode because they mentioned us a lot. No, they were talking about one of the stews, and I can't remember which one it was, had mentioned that he had heard that you don't want to get a score. You don't want to ace the test because the examiner will see that and go, oh, you think you know a lot. Now, and then they hammer it home on the oral portion. But like I said, I don't know if that's just for the commercial or, you know, whatever. But it kind of makes sense if you don't want to go in thinking you're a Mr. Know-it-all and then, you know, have the examiner just, you know, give you the third degree.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you go in with an 85 or 90%, but be confident that you know what you're talking about, I think you'll have a better experience. I could be totally wrong. I could be reading it completely wrong. I don't know. Haven't been there, but it seems kind of truthful.
As far as what I've heard, like my friend who's a pilot and even my previous flight instructor, Tony, they both said, you know, if you go in with 100, same thing as what you said, you know, they're going to think, okay, wait a minute, maybe you just, you know, memorize the answers or you think you're hot stuff, that kind of thing. And they'll grill you then. Or if you come in with a 70, I don't actually remember what the minimum is off the top of my head right now. Is it either, you know?
I think that's right.
I think it's 70, right? You know, if you come in with that or 75 or maybe even 80, it's kind of like, well, then they're looking at, okay, what did you not do well on? And then they're starting to hammer you too because maybe you don't know enough.
Exactly.
Especially because, yeah, that was the FAA test. But, you know, they're the last word there because that's their certification on the line at that point. Because when they sign off on you and say that you know all the information, you know, that's them saying that they've thoroughly, you know, tested you. And actually, my pilot friend heard this from the DPE he was doing his jackride with. So I think the, like, 90, 95 is the sweet spot from what I understand on the written, you know, where you're doing well enough that they know they're not going to grill you on the oral, but, you know, they're not worried that you're just too cocky.
Yeah.
Interesting. So pilots too, or any other CFIs that are out there, give us a shout and let us know if we're right or wrong or whether we should even be worrying about this.
I mean, yeah, I'd like 100, but I'm okay with a 95.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I'm right there
it's
with
still
you.
Still an A, you know? I don't know. I just want to, you know, I'll probably miss a few, but I want to know enough to, you know, get a decent score.
Yeah, it's one thing just to know all the right answers, but it's best to know why they are the right answers when it comes down to it, because when you get to the oral, you really got to know what you're talking about.
Exactly.
They're not going to give you A, B, or C.
Well, that too, I think, is where the, you know, doing well in the written comes in, is if you're, you know, I think if you do 100%, it's okay, you memorize that this is the answer to this question, versus doing, you know, getting a few wrong, you know, may show that you're thinking about it more, you know, maybe you overthought that question or something like that, you know, but you still did pretty well. And then he'll verify that probably within the first 5-10 minutes of the oral, you know. I mean, if you're right on the ball with the questions, knowing the answers and why it's the correct answer, then I think that would be enough. I could be wrong. I'm the student here, but
I'll go with that.
You know, one of my biggest concerns, though, is like I was saying before, 2 weeks ago I had ground school, and we were going over a lot of subjects. And like I said, I thought I knew quite a bit of it. And as soon as they started peeling back the onion, it's like, my instructor would ask me a question, you know, well, what about this? And I'd answer, and he'd go, well, why is that? And then, well, okay, that's good, but why? And where did that come from? And if you needed to show me that in the far aim, do you know where it's at? It's like, you know, it started to make me nervous, actually, as a student. And I actually personally, and I know there's people out there like me, when I was in college, I could have a conversation with you and I'd do fine. But if I get sat down at a test, I would get a brain freeze. And, you know, in engineering classes, that's not what you wanted to do, was have a brain freeze in the middle of a final or something. And I started to feel like that during this conversation, especially when the chief instructor came in and started asking me questions. And it was a little intimidating. However, it was, oh crap, I don't really know the answer to that. And it really started to mess with me a little bit.
My instructor's been on that too. The new instructor I have, he's mom. And he, you know, the first lesson, he's like, okay, starts doing the pre-flight, asking me questions, which I know is two-sided there. It's number one, do I know the answer to these questions? You know, getting me thinking about it and starting to quiz me like the DPE will do. And I have a feeling he's going to keep doing that all the way up until my check ride. You know, just constantly just asking me little questions, asking me the why, as you said, Mark. And, you know, I know he's going to keep doing that to get me prepared for the test. But I think it's also the double-sided. If he distracts me, will I go back to the same spot in the pre-flight? Because I know that's something they look for too.
Oh, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So I know he was doing a double-sided thing there. But, you know, I think that's one of the advantages. I know that's what he's doing. So I know how to, you know, I'm starting to learn how to do that. So I kind of like the fact that he's constantly asking me all these little questions here and there and kind of seeing what I know, making me realize, as you did, Mark, what I don't know. So I have a feeling that after, you know, a couple weeks with him, I'm going to be pretty set for that oral.
Good. That's good to know, though.
Yeah. So I'm kind of like, I'm nervous and I'm a little frustrated with it sometimes when I don't always know the answer, but I guess in the end I realize why he's doing it, and so it makes it, you know, a little better, but it's still a little nerve-wracking.
How about you, Chris? Has your instructor, I know you haven't been with her for about a month now, but I mean, was she doing that before?
Just a little bit, because we haven't gotten to anything very detailed yet. You know, we haven't worked on cross country type of stuff. I mean, it's just basically been pattern work and your typical, you know, steep turns, stalls, touch and goes, you know, stuff like that. So I would not near as much of what you guys have probably got into. I don't know exactly what kind of questions they're asking you, but the only thing she's hitting me up for on a regular basis is that, you know, where it looks like a good spot to set it down if you had an engine problem, you know, that sort of thing. And then, you know, your typical, you know, what engine RPM do you want to be at for, you know, level cruise, and just real typical standard stuff, I think, at this point in my flight training.
So in your training, let me backtrack a little bit. Did you do a ground school first, or are you doing it at the same time?
I'm doing it on my own at the same time. And then, at the end of our flight, you know, and we go in and I settle up with her for money wise and stuff, and we kind of go over the flight, what she liked or didn't like, or what I need to work on, you know. We'll get into some discussions regarding specifics.
Okay.
That sounds a lot like how mine's been.
That's how mine's doing, how I'm going through my training. However, they really highly recommend that you take the ground school first, so you have an overall understanding of what the process you're going to go through, which I did, but it was like 4 or 5 years ago, and it was through a completely different flight school. And then, so he knows I know this stuff, and that's why we have these questions every so often. He'll ask me, you know, aerodynamics questions, you know, and then he'll say, okay, that's cool. And then we'll go on about something else. And he'll, you know, it's like he's quizzing me, yet making sure that I'm still tracking, you know, along where we're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think this is a good point where, I know we're all part 61. I think it'd be nice to have a part 141 person on here, because that, you know, gives the whole other side of this. So we're all kind of learning on our own, at our own pace, and, you know, some instructors asking us questions, seeing where we are in our learning the ground material. But, you know, we're not like set to some kind of schedule of here's 6 weeks of the ground. You're going to go through everything. At the end of it, you're going to get your written. So I don't know about you guys, but I might throw it out there. If anybody is going through the 141 that wants to talk to us about it, you know, I'd be glad to have that part 61 versus part 191 discussion.
Yeah, that sounds good. I would like to talk to somebody who's actually going through the full blown, you know, we're obviously doing an instrument, but I'd like to talk to somebody who's planning on going on to regionals and you know, and keep going and see what their training is like.
I know at my old flight school at Freeway, there's a lot of people there did the ground school there and went through 141. I just personally didn't necessarily feel like spending the $300-$400 for the ground school when I could just do it on my own, which is why I chose part 61.
Yeah, it's definitely less structured, more flexible, and you know that part 141 definitely, if you're going to have some sort of aviation career where you're going to want to be a commercial pilot and fly an airline or something like that, it's definitely going to be the route you're going to have to go, I would say.
Hi, I'm Stuart Stevenson, a.k.a. Pilot Stu, from the Pilot's Journey podcast.
And I'm Stuart Stoll, a.k.a. CFI Stu, inviting you to join us for the Pilot's Journey podcast, where we discuss aviation, proficiency, and most of all, enjoying the journey.
You can find us in iTunes or at pilotsjourneypodcast.com. And don't forget to enjoy the journey.
Speaking of our instructors, we all had to do a pre-solo written test before we soloed, and you guys have soloed since that. I'm still waiting for my plane to be done so I can solo. Who knows when that's going to be. I guess I'll be back in the plane this week. Who knows? I'm assuming.
I hope so, man.
But we all had to do this pre-solo written, and your instructor is the one who made it up, or was it your school, or...
My pre-solo written was right out of the Jeppesen books, because the school follows the Jeppesen syllabus.
I see.
So, but yeah, I didn't realize it, but I actually had a copy of it in my flight bag, and they were talking about, oh, you got to do the written, and then I went to the school to up to the airport to pick it up because it's a take home, and it was a photocopy basically right out of the right. I was like, oh, I have this, you know. Could have saved myself an hour round trip of driving, but so that's the one that I did.
Mine was done up by the flight school, and I had no idea what to expect on it. And I was under the impression originally that it was like a 10, 20, 30 question test that you would do in the flight school. Like I would sit down before a lesson, I would do it, and then we would go over it. And I knew the part that it wasn't necessarily graded. It was just graded. You would, and the instructor would discuss it until it was 100%. But I thought it was just kind of a do it there at the flight school.
Oh.
And then I had no idea it was a take home. So beforehand, I'm sitting there thinking, all right, what do I need to study for this? And I'm on Twitter. I'm like, guys, what do I need to do for the pre-solo written? And
I think that's when I told you, I said, I'm doing one right now and at home, you know, and when you found out. I don't know.
You said that. And then CFI Stu sent me a message back. He's like, oh, just general, you know, airport operation stuff. He's like, I wouldn't really worry about it though. And I was like, he's saying I shouldn't really worry about it. All right, I guess I won't.
Uh-huh.
And then we go, and I still hadn't picked up on that mine went to be a take-home, too. I didn't know if it was just across-the-board take-home or maybe just, you know, your instructor was doing it differently than mine. So I didn't really know what to expect until I got to the school. And then, you know, he sits down. He shows me the written test. He's like, all right, cool. Shows me an answer question. I'm like, oh, so – do this at home? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, weight's off your shoulders, huh?
Yeah, that whole weight was like, all right.
He's like, it's open book, baby. Have at it. But mine's, I have a private instructor, so she wrote this herself. And it's mostly specific to the airplane that you're flying and the airfield that you're flying at. And how about you guys?
Mine was close to that. I just had to know. I actually had to have a copy of the POH.
Yeah.
That way there was the specifics, and that's asking you how many quarts of oil, what are the V speeds for this aircraft, and so that's what I had to know.
Right, right. Yeah, mine was...
That was only one section, though.
Okay. Mine was 48 questions long, and I didn't actually have in my hand a POH for the book, but I'm good with Google. And I've managed to find one or two and got all the information I found PDFs of the POH for an Archer 2 and an Archer 3. And, you know, one PDF was a little better than the other as far as being able to search for the information. But I finally got everything in there and turned it into her. And I have spoke to her since she hasn't graded it yet. We haven't talked over the phone specifically about all the questions on it. The last time we did talk, she's ready to grade it with me. We just haven't found the time together to do it. But what she did mention to me, she goes, you know, if you have any interest in being a instructor, just based on your answers here, I think you'd be very good at it. Because some of the stuff I went into probably quite a bit more detail than I needed to, but I just didn't know how much information she was really looking for. So I might have overdone it in certain areas.
Yeah, it was kind of hard to judge that a little bit. You know, how in-depth do they want the answers to be?
Mm-hmm.
But I was the same way. You know, you had to have the POH, which I didn't have when I did the test. I do have it now. And I did the same thing with Google. Although there's a couple things I kind of guessed off memory and was off by maybe, you know, 10 knots on the like the rotation speed. I knew it was 55, but then I second-guessed myself and it was 65. For some reason, you know, and obviously it's not that big a deal because, you know, you just go over to the instructor and he's just like, oh, it's this, corrects it, and then you're good. But mine was, I had one section that was about the plane. Part of it was about the plane. It's things like the V speed specific to the plane, if you're doing a short field takeoff, what flap setting, the, you know, once you're doing the magneto check, what's the max difference between the two, the right and left mag, and then what's the maximum drop you can have, quarts of oil, that kind of thing. So that was in there, but the majority of my pre-solo written was the FARs. It was, you know...
Did they want you to state where in the FAR the answer was, or...?
Exactly. So it was FARs and AIM. So like the first part was the general, you know, and so I'd have – I don't actually have the physical test. I only have my answers right now because he took the test for me. But it was like what pre-flight information must you have before you fly? So I was like, okay, I got to go find FAR 91.103 and say, okay, for IFR flights it's this. For VFR flights it's this. Or, you know – things like when do you have to have your lights on? So I go to the FARs. Okay, 91.209. My favorite one, the careless and reckless operation question. You know, what does careless and reckless mean? I don't think that's ever really defined.
That's all perception.
A couple of them, man. I was banging my head against the desk like, I don't know the answer to this question. And then I realized, wait a minute, we're going to go over this. So I will answer what I think it is, and then we'll go over it, and it'll be fine. Like the Careless and Reckless one, we had a good long discussion on that one, and I even had it on Twitter, and Mike Miley helped me out with that one too, because I couldn't figure out what the hell the FAR was saying.
Yeah, it's a little vague in a few places.
It's vague in a lot of places.
I think legally on purpose.
It's so they can twist it sometimes the way yeah. they want to, you know, so they can go either way occasionally. But that was most of my test. Like I had the sections were just general stuff. I had one section on right away, you know, glider and a powered plane, you know, which is the right away, airport and airspace operations, which is especially useful for my airport being in a class D. There was a section on like a lot of the, what are the Brett aviation policies? What's the max crosswind you can have? What's the, you know, if you're solo, what privileges do you have per the Brett aviation policies and the, you know, the FARs? I had a section on documentation and then the aircraft and maneuvers. So it was a lot more of the Brett aviation guidelines, the FARs and the AIM with a little bit out of the POH.
Your test sounds exactly like mine. It's just, that sounds to me like they have certain areas that they have to ask you questions about.
Yeah.
For the, so.
Yeah. I had to describe all the different V speeds. You know, I'm sure you had that too.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah.
When checking the fuel sumps, what's the pilot looking for? The simple stuff that you very first started with, like, you know, what caused the aircraft to turn left when accelerating down the runway on takeoff, you know, all that simple stuff. And then the specifics regarding the airplane you've been flying and the airport you're flying at, you know.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I actually have a funny story. I don't know if I told this on one of the previous podcasts or not, but when I had to go to Denver on business about a month ago now, and my instructor had given me the written to do to take home and the pre-solo written, obviously. And I worked on a little bit while I was there, but I really focused mostly on the time that I had coming back to Sacramento from Denver. So I ended up getting on the plane early. And so I'm sitting right up in the front row. And as we're rolling or as we're flying down, I grabbed my paperwork and a book out of my backpack that I have. And I'm sitting there and I'm just going through writing all this stuff. And I flip it open and it's, you know, the FAR AIM is right there. Passengers around me are looking at me like, why do you have a FAR AIM? who are you?
Yeah.
And the flight attendants are walking by going, oh, cool, you got a FAR AIM. That's cool. And they're like, you know, but passengers around me are kind of like, okay, this is post 9/11. Why do you have something to do with airplane operations? I'm like, I'm a student pilot.
All I can tell you, ma'am, is I work for the FAA.
Exactly.
Sit down.
Exactly. You know, if I thought about it, I would have played it up a little bit more, but it was funny. It's just, I had a woman that was probably in her late 50s sitting next to me, and she looked over, she's like, what is that all for? So I told her, she's like, oh, okay.
I surprised anyone around you even knew what that was.
I had a few looks, but then most people didn't have no clue, but, you know, you see the picture of the airplane on the,
yeah.
Yeah, you
know, but I got kind of a chuckle out of that. And
how to fly an airplane when you don't care about landing? Now that book would definitely bring up some questions.
That would be bad. That would be bad.
So there was no callback of is there a pilot on board? Don't panic. But does anybody know how to fly a plane?
Yeah, there was not a I had the fish moment.
I'd be throwing elbows trying to get to the front of the cockpit.
I'd be throwing everything.
That's funny. That's Tupper's tagline every time he flies.
Yeah.
Half the fish.
That was a great episode, by the way. Him and Rob Mark talking about that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was hilarious. Yeah.
And it was really cool, you know, student pilot thinking about it, sitting there like, man, that'd be awesome.
Everyone's dream. Mm-hmm. Everyone else on the plane's nightmare, your dream. Isn't that sick?
It is. That's why I debated taking my logbook with me when I went to Florida.
Yeah.
And my girlfriend even admitted the fact. She's like, do you have your logbook with you? I was like, no. She's like, I figured you would have brought it.
just in case they pull you up there. Hey, can you sign off on my logbook since I didn't help land the plane?
If I get in that situation, they're sure as hell going to sign my logbook. I'm putting it in my logbook. I mean, I don't care. But
just to be honest, we're the last ones on the plane that's ever going to get called. There was the flight attendant that had a commercial rating, and they grilled her.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that. And it was like, oh, that's the flight attendant, the flight attendant. Mm-hmm. Well, wait a minute. She's a commercially rated pilot. She has more experience than pretty much everybody on the plane except for the pilot and the first officer. So back off. She knew what she was doing.
Yeah. And she was just going to be the first officer for that anyway. So
she was making radio calls and putting in flaps as required, or, you know, whatever the pilot was asking for.
Yeah.
She's following the checklist, doing what he's saying and talking to ATC, stuff she already knows.
Stuff like that, when I hear it on the news, it makes me so mad. You know, I just want to throw things at the TV going, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. They don't understand.
Anyhow, so any other comments on the pre-solo?
Nada.
I think we've covered it.
I think we've covered it. Hopefully any other student pilots who are listening aren't as scared as I was about it. It's a take-home.
Take-home. Open book.
Open book, take-home.
Open Twitter.
Just have the far aim, you'll be fine.
I will say this, though. I did want to destroy the far aim after I was done with this test. And my instructor, too, said at the point, he's like, this test is really there so you can get into the far aim and start looking at it. You know, he's like, they're hoping that when you find that answer, you look at a couple other ones and you start to get to know it. So moving right along.
Next.
Okay, so I have a question. And this only applies to one of the two airplanes that I fly. But I've been intrigued by this, and I never got a chance to ask my instructor, because by the time he came, I was done the pre-flight. I was just kind of wasn't thinking about it anymore. But so one of the two planes has wheel pants on the main gear.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them actually have it on the nose gear. And when I started flying it at Freeway Airport, none of them had any kind of wheel pants on them. So you had access to the brakes. You had access to all of the nuts. You could see the full wheel, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm intrigued by the fact that you can't really, with the wheel pants, you can't check the brakes. You can't check that the three nuts, at least on the 172s, are there. You can't check the axle that, you know, there's a... On the 172s, there's a big nut and a cotter pin through it. You can't really check for bulk spots without really moving the plane. So start the discussion here, and anybody else who's listening, send us messages on this. But, you know, I mean, I feel like I have to skip things with the wheel pants on there.
Yeah, you're basically down to, do I see a leak? Is there any brake fluid leaking? And that's about all you can tell. And you can see, I don't know, 20% of the tire, maybe less.
I mean, at least you can tell if it's flat, but...
Yeah. So all you can see is if the brakes are leaking, maybe, and if you got any kind of, you know, flat or flat spot on some of the tire, but that's about it. Yeah, my Archer's the same way. It's got wheel pants on it, and that's what my instructor told me. She goes, you know, because it's got wheel pants on it, we can't look specifically at the rotor. We can't check the thickness of the brake pads. We can't check basically anything other than is there any brake fluid leaking? And you're just pretty much down to, has anyone logged anything in the logbook on that plane regarding noticing, you know, squishiness of the brakes or squeaking or squealing or anything like that?
Okay.
I suppose that's what you're left with. And I wonder if that's why they leave the wheel pants off of some of the other ones after, you know, because they probably came with wheel pants. And they decided not to put them back on for maintenance reasons.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's kind of like, I guess, the double-edged sword there on pre-flight or the extra 2-3 miles an hour and gas savings.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I was just curious about that too, because one of the planes had a bald spot on one of the main tires. You know, and you wouldn't have seen that because it was on the, you know, on the top when I walked up to it, and you wouldn't have seen that with the wheel pants on it. And the instructor said that was, you know, okay, and we flew with it, which was interesting because as soon as you took off, the wheel would vibrate, so you had to hit the brakes right after you take off to stop the wheel from spinning right away so you wouldn't get that shutter.
Mm-hmm.
But that's actually the plane I soloed in. But Yeah, I was just thinking about that. It just always intrigued me, and I just never got a chance to ask the question.
The members of the In the Pattern podcast are participating as private individuals. Their comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the various organizations they work with, the instructors they learn from, or the flight schools they attend. Remember, these guys are student pilots, so anything you hear on this podcast that sounds like advice on an aircraft operation is obviously from the perspective of student pilot. You should always consider your own situation, consult your instructor, remember your training, and fly the airplane. Cleared for the option.
Well, we've been running a little while here, but before we wrap up, we did get an email from someone. We'd like to go over that, right, guys?
Yeah,
absolutely.
All right.
Yeah.
And we appreciate all the comments and feedback. And we got an email here from Craig Spurko, and he says, "Mark, Chris, and John heard about your show while listening to the Pilot's Journey podcast yesterday. Thanks, guys, for talking about us. We appreciate that. And I've already listened to the first four. So he's jumped right on the bandwagon and flying right along with us. It's nice to hear student pilots at a similar stage. Soloed 3 weeks ago himself, so that's awesome.
Congratulations on that too.
Yeah, nice one. We should probably we might want to ask him to come on one time. Tell us about that, how that was. I particularly enjoyed the discussion in episode 4 regarding the frustration of dealing with multiple instructors. John's nemesis right there. One question. You're always talking about how much money it costs to fly, train, rent, etc. Did you consider going sport pilot? I could be biased in that my first attempt at a PPL about 5 years ago was in a 30-plus-year-old broken-down old Cessna, and now I'm training in a much more responsive low-wing glass cockpit LSA, and it's much less expensive. Perhaps you're planning on going IFR, commercial, etc. I may do that too. But I was thinking I'd do my first couple hundred hours in daylight VFR anyway. So keep up the great work. Best, Craig." Thanks a lot, Craig. I myself thought about that from the beginning. You know, from the beginning of hearing about LSA, I was like, oh, finally, it's going to be cheap enough. I'll be able to get my license, you know. And I think the main problem with it is that it's very difficult to find planes to rent that are in that category anywhere. Well, maybe not anywhere. Out here, I'm having a problem. I don't know if I don't think anyone at Deer Valley has one. I think there might be one over at Glendale Airport. But then I agree with you is that daylight VFR flying is going to be the majority of your flying. That's, you know, I'm in Phoenix, Arizona. It's daylight VFR flying, you know, out here, you know, 350 days out of the year practically. It almost never is bad, rainy or cloudy or nothing like that. So it's usually always good flying weather, and for the most part, always going to be flying in the day as well. But a friend of mine introduced me to a private instructor, my instructor that I'm going through, and after we started talking about the money side of it, it was only going to be between $1,500 and $2,000 difference. So I thought, you know, what the heck, let's just go ahead and get the full thing out of the way. And so, you know, that's how I made my decision. How about you guys? Did you ever consider it?
I did, but there's, like you were saying, Chris, in the Sacramento area here, there's not a lot of LSAs available. I mean, you know, the initial push, especially when I started this initially 5 years ago, an LSA in everybody's mind here was an ultralight, mm-hmm. you know, and I didn't want to go that route. I mean, if I'm going to fly, I'm going to get my private. And then the sport pilot certificate came out and like, well, maybe I'll do that. Three of the flight schools that I talked to said, nah, you don't want to go that route. You want to be a private, you know. But now with a little bit more push and, you know, between the FAA saying, hey, you guys really need to get involved in this, EAA saying, hey, we support this, you know, now it's not you know, looked at funny. My flight school just got an LSA 2 weeks ago, and I mean I'm not a small guy, but I look at that plane and you know, I'm thinking I'm not sure that would work for me. Now my instructor goes, we'd have no problem because it's It's a CT.
Flight design.
Yeah.
Flight design CT. And it's, you know, it's a nice plane, glass cockpit, and it's a high wing. But honestly, I don't think it's for me, and it wouldn't fit my mission. And besides the fact, they just put out the rates. It's the same exact rate as the Archer 2 that I'm flying, that I'm very comfortable in.
Yeah.
So
you're gonna save it? We were talking about that. I mentioned that you'd save maybe some money in fuel, but if you're paying wet, then it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. The only one that's gonna get advantage of that or take advantage of that is the school. So, you know, and I don't mind saving the school money because I consider all of them their friends. However, Is it in my best interest to change to a new airframe just to get something new and clean and glass? No, not really. Yeah. So, but you know, the one plane that I would actually love to fly and give it a shot for me would be the Piper Sport. And there's one down in Fresno that I've been invited to come down and see it. It's about a 2-hour flight from here, but you know, maybe down the road as one of the cross countries, maybe we can, you know, I've talked to my instructor going down that way, but. Yeah. Until I'm a licensed pilot, I'm not even going to think about anything else but the Archer 2, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. It's a good looking plane, that Piper Sport, and what got me interested was that stinking Icon. Love that plane.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we have I saw a Sport Cruiser, the original Czech one.
Yeah, yeah. Before Piper took it over.
Yeah, I saw one of those when I was taxiing back to the hangar, one of my lessons the other day. It's just a sexy-looking airplane, and it's one at Oshkosh, too.
I was kind of miffed a little bit when Piper decided to take that over. I'm like, come on, dude, you're Piper. Build your own. You can do it. I know it looks like it would be a Piper design, but just go ahead and build your own. I would just feel better about it. But
not buying one anyway. Sense for them.
Yeah. Otherwise it'd be 5 years before they'd get one out, you know, and they'd be so behind the curve.
And all the trouble Cessna's having with the Skycatcher, it just makes sense for them to just zip in and bam, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we got one too.
But, yeah.
I also consider the Sport Pilot, and it's kind of one of those things. Yeah, I could save money. I could do it. I could take people up in less time. And I considered it, except I guess the biggest thing for me doing that was the fact that there really wasn't anything around that has them. The closest airport I know of is Bay Bridge Airport, which is like 40 minutes from me, or was 40 minutes. I think it's longer now that I moved. So it was kind of like I had airports closer that had, like when I originally started, that had 172s flying for $89.99 an hour wet. So it was kind of like, well, I'll just go ahead and, you know, just keep it what I was originally going to do, which is the private. I kind of wish some of the schools around here had the LSAs because I'd love to fly them. But, you know, nobody had it around, so there really wasn't that option. And I do know that I'm going to continue with it. I would like to get my CFI. I'm going to hack at it the long way. But, you know, I know I'm going to get my IFR afterwards. I'm going to get my commercial. And that wasn't necessarily the reason why I skipped over the Sport Pilot. Because I'd be okay with getting the Sport Pilot then get the private. You know, I know I'm going to continue regardless. I think it was really just there wasn't any around, and it just made sense for me here, just go for the private. And, you know, I always expected just to get the private anyway. So, and it's really honestly not that much more money to get the private when you really look at it, because it's not too much more.
Not really. You don't know how they're going. You know, they say 20 hours, right? You know, just like they say only 40 hours for a private. But, you know, that 20 could easily turn into 35.
Well, I'm sorry. You still have to, you still have to solo for it.
Yeah.
You still have to do everything I've done so far. You still have to do on an LSA. And I didn't solo until I was at 28.6 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. So... I don't know. I don't know anyone who's went through it and completed it yet. If anyone listening out there has done that, would love to know the real information on that of what you're flying, what you're renting, what you're paying for it, and how fast did you actually get the license? Be good to know.
The other thing I'd like to Drastuski. He said something about the 30-year-old broken-down Cessna. And when I first started, they were pretty old planes. But I didn't have any real problem flying them. And I will say this, I like the steam gauges.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, even as a gadget computer science geek, I'm sitting here with an iPad and two computers next to me right now. Mm-hmm. I still prefer the steam gauges, especially for training. And the reason why I like the steam gauges for that is because I understood them going into it already. And I didn't want the added overhead of learning computer equipment on top of learning to fly. Because I know how electronics are, and I know how I'm going to be with them, and I'm going to want to do all this fancy stuff with them, and I just didn't want to bother with it when I was training.
For me, the Garmin 430 that's in my plane is gadget enough for me. It does plenty.
Yeah, I had one of those too with ADS-B when I was at Freeway, and that was plenty. And now I'm. I think the one I have now is a King something. I mean, now I'm flying newer planes, so it's not that big a deal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm flying a 99 or a 2004, 2006, something like that. So, you know, they're newer planes, they're high-powered planes, and, you know, that doesn't bother me any. I mean, yeah, I could, and they also have a G1000 on the field, so I could use that if I wanted to, but I chose to stay away from it.
Yeah, stick with the basics first is probably the best way to start out.
So,
speaking of renting planes, I came across a cool website called Archer Bravo, archerbravo.com, and they've got a link on there that you click for rentals, and then you have some drop downs, and one of them you can choose what kind of plane you want to fly, or not specifically plane. It says you're looking for a plane, a glider, helicopter, whatever, you know. And then you can go searching by state and stuff like that. So, like, for example, for Mark, California, Sacramento area, what kind of planes are for rent in that area and how much. And the cheapest thing out there is some flight school called Cal Aggie Flying Farmers Inc. And you know, they got 152s for $68.25 an hour.
Wow.
And from there, if I page up to six pages later, you can go rent a Pitts S2B from someone for $365 an hour. So to go learn some acro, you know.
I'm totally doing that.
So it's a cool little website, archerbravo.com, and somehow they aggregate across. I don't know if different rental companies are putting their information in here or if they're aggregating it from other websites and pulling the data in, because there's tons of just for the Sacramento area, there was six pages of planes to be rented. So, and I think here in the Phoenix area there was tons too. That might be a good place for you to go look if you're out hunting for a deal on trying to find a plane to rent or something different in your area. I know what it was. Airplane brand. Let's see. What is it? The Cirrus, right? We were talking about how expensive Cirruses were to rent.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. We'll go find the cheapest Cirrus to rent. All right. Here it is. What do you think is the cheapest price on a Cirrus SR20?
$220 an hour.
$149.
In your area?
No, I just did the whole country, but it picked Airport GEU, which is Glendale, which is 10 miles from my house, or 15 miles from my house. So it actually is.
Wet or dry?
It doesn't say. Let me see. It says a standard rate. Standard rates are priced by the hour, by the renter, as measured in most cases by the Hobbs meter in the aircraft. Standard rates do not include a discount like the block rate. Rates are wet, included fuel.
Wow. I pay $145 for a 172.
So, wow. A 2004 Cirrus SR20 over at Glendale Airport in Arizona, $149.
How far is that from you? Why are you not there?
Yeah, I wonder, huh? Hey, after I get my license, I might have to go down there and take a spin in it just to get typewriter. I don't know if you have to get typewriter in it, but just get checked out at least.
you get checked out. Because it's still a single engine land, so you don't have to get to get as long as it's under a certain weight, you don't have to be typewritten in it.
Yeah. Oh, this is funny. Page 8 of this for Cirrus's, which is the most expensive SDL, that would be Scottsdale Airport in Arizona. Sawyer Aviation has an SR-22 for $328 an hour, so prices do vary. Please see your dealers. So, neat little website to go to if you want to check out different rental prices.
Cool. All right. Well, so we're getting the point here. You guys got some shout-outs.
I don't really have much in the way of shout-outs. Specifically, I haven't been doing much lately, but you know, as always, we appreciate all of our listeners, and we keep getting a few more every time we put out a podcast. So our listening group is growing, and we really appreciate everybody talking about us.
Absolutely.
Mark, you have any shout-outs?
Yeah, I have one. It's not really as specific, but I guess it could be. The one I have is for Dan Pimentel. He's from Oregon. He is the founder of Airplaneista online magazine. Dan's done a fabulous job on putting this magazine together. The December issue just hit, and it's as good as any magazine you'll find on the newsstand. And best part is you can get it for free. So I highly recommend it. Check it out at airplaneista.com. It's AIRPLANISTA.com. And Dan's also on Twitter as at Airplaneista. And he's always looking for feedback, and he's looking for letters to the editor, guest writers. So check it out. I highly recommend it.
You totally stole my shout out there for that one, because I was going to say that too, man. He's doing a great job, and I had the pleasure of meeting him at Oshkosh this year, sitting down and having a conversation with him, and just an awesome guy. Got a ride in Dougie to Oshkosh, which I was so jealous
of. Oh, nice.
But
yellow DC-3 with a smiling face.
Yep. And it's there's a page in the first issue that has that too, the October one. But I've already read through the October and the December one. I'm actually still hacking through the November one, but I love it, and it's just such a great read, and it's great on the iPad too. If you download PDF and iBooks, it's like you have a physical magazine. You know, you wouldn't know that it was a free online thing. You'd think you'd be paying $24 a year for it, you know?
Yeah, appreciate the effort for free, because that's right in my wheelhouse for money right now.
Exactly. And like the latest episode, I mean, he's got great pictures from what's his name, from Flight Blogger, John Ostrower, of the Boeing plant. I mean, just awesome. So props to him for that one. I have a couple other shout outs. For a quick one to Pilot Finance for help me hopefully finish up my rating. It's a neat idea, because they specialize in flight training, which is why I like it. You know, they had already been set up through my flight school, and even if they're not set up in your flight school, it's only a few day process, and they were really quick to get back to me and work with me on a plan to finish my license. So I highly recommend it for people who are, you know, have decent credit and are looking to really finish their license. They specialize in basically full programs for the private or the instrument. They don't do the accelerated. I think they only do up to like 5 lessons per week or something like that.
Hmm.
It's a good idea. Suggest anyone look them up. I'd also like to shout out to my CFI, Usman, again. I've been in contact with him through email the past couple weeks, which has been kind of nice. Even with the troubles of transitioning to him, it's been kind of nice, because we've been having, you know, a couple little conversations online. He's a little more accessible than some of my other CFIs, so props on that one. So shout out to him. Finally, just a final shout out to Pilot's Journey Podcast again, just for giving us some shout outs and talking about us a whole bunch. And as I said on Twitter earlier today, if you're not listening to them, you should. because it is just a great listen.
Most definitely.
Agreed.
Yeah, and definitely check out the voicesinyourhead.com if you're want to hit up on some other aviation podcasts. Or, our website inthepattern.com has a list of podcasts too. So check them all out. And that'll about do it for my shout outs.
I forgot to mention one other thing earlier is that let's see, today is the 2nd, and 2 weeks from now on the 16th, if all goes well, I get to go down to the Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport and take a tour through the Phoenix Tracon, and I get to go check out the air traffic controllers and talk to them and ask questions and go watch the operations from the inside.
That's very cool.
I was so surprised. The Deer Valley Pilots Association, which I just got hooked up with, is getting this hooked up for us. And they're like, if you're interested, send us an email and we'll put your name on the list. I was like, yes, I'm on it. So hopefully I get in. There's a limited amount of seats. So hopefully, I was one of them. And, I don't think they're going to probably let me take pictures or anything like that, but, we'll see how it goes. I'll definitely report back.
I would make my instructor do my long cross country out there just for that.
Yeah, that would be the long cross country, huh? Yeah, we got a long cross country. We got three fuel stops.
It's pretty more than that.
Yeah, probably.
But yeah, that sounds awesome. I'm very jealous if you get in that.
When I was in Cub Scouts or Boy Scouts when I was in grade school, I got to go do that at Kansas City's terminal or tower. One of my one of the Boy Scouts' father was an air traffic controller, so he took us through a tour of that. I remember getting to go play with the radar with the little trackball on it, and you'd go move it around and push a button when you hit the aircraft and pop up the information on it. And they let us play around with that. It was many, many years ago, obviously. So it'd be cool to see what a new updated one, because this tower is only, I think it's less than 5 years old.
Cool.
Anywho, that about wraps it up for this episode, I believe.
Yes, it does. So
So you can find the In the Pattern Podcast. Our website is inthepatternpodcast.com. We also have a page on My Transponder. It should be listed under In the Pattern. You can also find us at iTunes if you search for In the Pattern or In the Pattern Podcast. You can reach all of us on the In the Pattern Podcast by email through podcast@inthepatternpodcast.com or on Twitter as In the Pattern. You can reach me at john@inthepatternpodcast.com, on Twitter as Pilot Conway, and also on My Transponder as Pilot Conway. Chris?
Yeah, you can find me at chris@inthepatternpodcast.com as well. On Twitter at CHOLUBAZ, that's CHOLUBAZ, and my transponder is also CHOLUBAZ. And Mark?
Yeah, you can find me at mark@inthepatternpodcast.com, student pilot Mark on Twitter, and M. Lacoste on my transponder. Give us a shout.
Cool, and lastly, just because we can and because Google is awesome, you can also call us if you'd like. Leave a voicemail. I'm sure we could probably fit it into playing back the show or something like that. At 707-PCAST-01. That's 707-PAPA-CHARLIE-ALPHA-SIERRA-TANGO-01.
With that, I'd say this about wraps up this episode of the In the Pattern Podcast. I'd like to thank you all for listening. Make left traffic. You're cleared for the option.
This and other great shows at the Aviation Podcast Network.
TheVoicesInYourHead.com.
I'm going to go with the ums again. Me too. Cool. I'm going to finish this bottle tonight. I'll just see that happening.
So what is it?
It's Verdi. It's a 5% alcohol by volume malt beverage with natural flavors. Produced and bottled in Italy. My grandparents are obsessed with it.
I have heard of that. I was stationed in Northern Europe, so I traveled quite a bit of Europe.
I don't know how big a bottle it is. It's a pretty big bottle.
It was.
Well, yeah. I'll have to take a picture of it and put it in the show notes or something. Here's what John went through while we recorded this episode.
That's funny. So my beverage is 12 ounces, so you probably got at least 18 to 24 ounce.
Who, me?
Yeah.
Oh, no, this is bigger than a 40.
Really? Holy crap.
And it's gone already.
No, it's not gone yet, but it's probably, it's bigger than a 750 milliliter bottle of wine. It's probably the next step up from that.
Wow. Yeehaw.
But it's only 5%, so it's like I'm drinking a 40, essentially.
A little thunder ripple going on there.
Old English, man. Old English. All right, Chris, go for it.
But I got kind of a chuckle out of that. And
how to fly an airplane when you don't care about landing. Now that book would definitely bring up some questions.
That would be bad. That would be bad.
Yeah, my previous airport was part of all of that stuff.
Oh, yeah?
One of them actually went to my airport, and they wouldn't let him rent a plane.
Nice.
Yeah, because he was not a good pilot, but side note. But with that, I'd say this about wraps up this episode of the In the Pattern podcast. I'd like to thank you all for listening. Blah, 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 blah. What was the thing I said? That's what I say.
All right.
Wiki, wiki.
Wiki, wiki.